just remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Good morning, Vietnam, and good timely greeting to you, listener. Welcome back to yet another installment in our super special Marvel series here at Play It Again, Kyla. I am so excited for today's episode. It's an episode towards which we have been building from the very beginning of this series. I am, of course, meaning that we are going to be talking about The Avengers today, and it's really a movie that needs no introduction. I mean, we've all seen it. We all have very strong feelings about it. So rather than waste your time here with a long, drawn-out intro, I'm going to just say, let's just go ahead and jump to the meat of this conversation. Very excited to have Hagen back as my special guest today, and we're going to have a very, very fun conversation. We're going to delve into some of the criticisms of Marvel and what this saga means as a narrative and if how it impacts the way we will look at narrative in film going forward as the cinematic landscape continues to evolve and change. So I'm very excited about that. So let's just jump in, shall we? Let's get started.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people. So when we needed them, they could fight the battles that we never could. Gentlemen, what are you prepared to do?
No offense, but I don't play well with others.
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away, what are you?
A genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
If we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn sure we'll avenge it.
Dr. Banner, your work is unparalleled, and I'm a huge fan of the way you lose control and turn into an enormous green rage monster.
Thanks.
So, here today to help me discuss The Avengers is a special guest, Hagen. Now, Hagen's been on the show a few times and was a little confused about how he should introduce himself since he's already answered my standard Marvel-specific getting-to-know-you questions. So, Hagen, I'm going to throw a random icebreaker question at you from my repertoire from my time as a peer advisor. How's that sound?
Excellent.
Okay. Your given icebreaker is, if you had to compare yourself to a kitchen appliance, what kitchen appliance would you be and why?
Okay, does like appliance mean it's like run by electricity or like just anything in the kitchen?
You can be absolutely anything in the kitchen.
I don't know. That's a tough one. Can I be... I don't know. I'll be a dishwasher.
I have
no reasoning behind it. It felt right.
You have no reasoning behind being a dishwasher.
Well, I was just like picturing our kitchen, and we just recently got like a new like squishy mat thing. And so for a second I thought of that, but I'm like, no, I don't want people like walking all over me. So then I just picked something else.
So you just felt in your spirit that you were a dishwasher and you just went with it.
Correct.
Okay. I always answer this by saying I'm a blender.
Because I thought of blender.
I contain multitudes and I combine like interest in things that shouldn't really go together, but somehow I make them jibe like within one thing. So that's my reasoning for being a blender. You got to get better at these icebreakers if you're going to be an Elliot peer advisor, Hagen. That's all I have to say.
Okay, I'll work on it. We'll see.
All right. So before we get into the meat of our discussion about Avengers, I'm going to offer some behind the scenes fun facts. Hagen, you're probably aware of a lot of these, but we'll see if I can catch you off guard with any of them.
Okay.
All right. So my first fun fact is that the car that is seen skidding on its front end after being blasted by Loki was not actually planned to do that. It was meant to flip over entirely, but the stunt was miscalculated and it resulted in what I think is the cooler stunt of it just like sliding in front of Loki like that. This film was released in the United Kingdom under the title Marvel's Avengers Assemble, to avoid confusion with the iconic British franchise, The Avengers.
Wait, what British franchise?
You don't know the British franchise, The Avengers?
No.
It's like from, like, there's like one in the 60s and there's one in the 90s. It's, you need to look it up. It's not our Avengers.
Okay.
So we'll talk more about that some other time.
Okay.
This next one is probably my favorite fun fact. So you may have noticed that Gwyneth Paltrow is barefoot in almost all of her scenes in this movie. It's because she's actually taller than Robert Downey Jr. So in their scenes together, she's barefoot and he's wearing multi-inch platform shoes to try to make himself look taller than her.
Is this like something he wanted to do or that like they wanted to do?
I don't know. I haven't found specification as to that point. I could see it being either. I could see Marvel being like, Tony should probably be taller than Pepper. But I could also really see RDJ being like, nah, I'm going to be taller than Gwyneth.
Yeah, so I could see it going either way.
Yeah. Allison Hannigan, who knew Joss Whedon from her work on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, actually suggested her friend and co-star from How I Met Your Mother, Cobie Smulders, for the role of Agent Maria Hill. It's a nice little full circle moment for the Joss Whedon fandom. Mark Ruffalo, why are you laughing at me?
No reason.
Okay. Mark Ruffalo was initially floated as a potential Hulk for the 2008 standalone film before Edward Norton was cast. Norton and Ruffalo are friends, and Edward Norton apparently gave his blessing after Mark Ruffalo was cast in the role. Ruffalo has described the Hulk as, quote, my generation's Hamlet, saying that every young actor has taken a crack at the role. Isn't that just so funny, describing the Hulk as Hamlet?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not sure. Well, actually, that's interesting just because I'm now thinking of the one, like, Shakespeare line.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, yeah, that's a unique comparison.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's such a Mark Ruffalo thing to say, too, I feel like. Like, he's the only person that could pull that off, like, saying that out loud, and people wouldn't just be like, you're the most ridiculous person.
I mean, are you calling him the most ridiculous person now?
No, because he's Mark Ruffalo, so he pulls it off.
Okay, fair enough.
Jeremy Renner was trained by the Olympic archery team for his role as Hawkeye.
I did know that one.
Imagine you're like a professional archer and Jeremy Renner rolls up and is like, hey, gotta do this for a movie. Will you show me how it's done?
I wonder who, like, enjoys that more, like, working with, like, pro archers or working with, like, a movie star?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've always, like, I wonder what that is like to be, like, the specialist that gives advice to, like, a movie star, like, coming into a role.
Right, you know? Or just, like, in general, different, like, celebrities, like, talking to other celebrities in completely different realms, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
athletes with like movie stars versus like singers versus
mm-hmm.
something else.
the hierarchy of fame is very interesting to me, and this is a completely different episode that we will get into at some point, but like the notion that singers and like musicians are a completely different level of famous than actors. And like the question of accessibility, like who we expect to be most immediately accessible, it's just very interesting to me.
Huh. Okay. I don't know which one it goes above which, so.
Well, supposedly, like, according to most actors, singers go above actors.
Huh.
I
feel like it's the same thing with, like, athletes, though. It just depends on, like, what tier you are. Because, like, I would put LeBron James over a lot of movie stars, right? But, yeah. like, that doesn't mean that, but the average movie star I would put above the average NBA player, you know?
Yeah, that's true too. So it depends on like how much you succeed in your own field, I guess.
Right.
Because definitely like most A-list actors I would put above like all like SoundCloud rappers with some degree of following, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you're right there. It's just interesting though, like the different levels of fame you expect to be associated with someone based on their given field.
Right.
Chris Hemsworth claims that he had to consume his body weight in grams of protein to maintain the muscle mass he had built up from the Thor film.
Did he have to do that each consecutive movie or just this one time?
I don't know. That's what I'm wondering. Like, did he eventually like just settle into a groove or like he just had this muscle mass, or did he like have to continue like increasing his intake? Surely not. Like, there's no way. I don't know, though. Okay, this next fun fact. Hagen can choose to or to not provide further background information. But according to IMDb, Natalie Portman was scheduled to appear as Jane in this film, but had to drop out due to her pregnancy. I take slight issue with this fact, though, because filming was not completed on this film until a few months after her first child was born.
And you know this how.
Because I know when Olive was born, okay? Sue me. It's not hard when she's always super pregnant at the Oscars to remember the months in which her children are born, okay? It's not that weird. Don't come for me, Hagen.
Okay.
But Hagen pointed out, though, she probably wasn't eager to go to work on an Avengers set just a month or two after having given birth, and that's fair. She did take a slight break from acting after Olive's birth, so I'll give it to her that maybe she just didn't want to. You have anything else you'd like to add before I move on, Hagen?
I'll remain silent.
Okay. Anything you say can and will be held against you.
I'm very aware.
This was the first Marvel movie to earn more than $1 billion at the box office.
Ooh.
This film originally was going to utilize a framing device of Agent Maria Hill testifying about Nick Fury's leadership. So the film was going to like open and close with her testimony before the council, which I think is really interesting. I see why they didn't go in that direction, because it really like wasn't necessitated. Like, there didn't need to be a framing device. I don't think the plot works well on its own. But it does kind of make me wonder, like, a few lingering shots on Agent Hill, like, if they were originally supposed to be more important, you know?
Right.
And also, it makes me wonder if they kind of, like, held on to that idea to have Nat's testimony in the later film, you know?
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is a great moment that we'll get to when I get to that episode. With his performance in this film, Samuel L. Jackson became only the second actor, after Hugh Jackman, to play the same comic book character in 5 different movies. So I would assume Samuel L. Jackson now is far and away the record holder for having played one character in the most superhero movies.
I mean, he's gotta be. Because he just is in, like, each and every one.
Mm-hmm. And there have been, what, like, 23 now? So...
Right. I mean, well, he's not in, like, all of them, but he's in, like, I'd say 2/3 or so.
Yeah, I would definitely, like, he's gotta have been in more than 15.
Right. I feel like several people are, from the Marvel franchise, are now, like, on that list above Hugh Jackman, so.
Yeah. Love you, Hugh Jackman, but you have been surpassed. This next one is not surprising at all, but Robert Downey Jr. improvised many of his most memorable lines in this film.
Really?
Yeah. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Batman is playing Galaga straight from the brain of Mr. Robert Downey Jr. Let's just not come in tomorrow. My personal favorite, doth mother know thou weareth her drapes? Like, all of these just completely from the brain of the man, the myth, the legend, RDJ. He also apparently, like, kept food, like, hidden on set. And so, like, all the times when Tony's, like, kind of chewing in scenes, like,
I mean, well, he had the blueberries.
Yeah. But so he was, like, actually...
offer that as, like, a... Like, so he offered a blueberry as, like, improvisation, or did they just incorporate it at that point?
No, he offered it as improv. Like, he was just eating on his own time as they were filming. This man is iconic. Also, he thought that the final scene could use some, like, snapping.
Oh, I did know the shawarma thing.
Yeah, because he originally had a different line there. Also, Hulk, like, roaring in his face was improv by Mark Ruffalo as he was providing the motion capture. So I guess Tony was just going to, like, eventually wake up. But Mark Ruffalo was like, you know what would be kind of interesting is if we just had Hulk, like, roar right in his face. And so he did that in the motion capture session, and they incorporated it. And then I can't remember what the original line that RDJ was supposed to say there was, but he was like, you know, like, let me just kind of joke around, say let's not come in tomorrow. And then he brought up the shawarma thing. And so he thought that the movie needed the actual shawarma scene and came up with that himself. And so they had to manage to bring everyone back together because filming had already, like, completed when inspiration struck Robert Downey Jr. And so they brought everyone back together just to film that one scene. And Chris Evans had already begun to grow a beard for his role in Snowpiercer. And so he couldn't shave his beard. So they actually had to provide him with a prosthetic to cover his beard. And that's why Cap, like, isn't seen, like, eating. Like, if you pay attention, he's just kind of sitting there. And it's because he couldn't eat with the prosthetic on.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So those are my fun facts. You got any to add, Hagen? You want to roast me for Natalie Portman's pregnancy timeline? Feel free.
Oh, no. I was just going to include, because we discussed this, but apparently it wasn't worth mentioning, that some of the filming was done in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes. I was leaving that one to you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so I had to incorporate that.
Mm-hmm. It's worth mentioning. I did not know that until I was doing research for this episode, and I was very happy for you when I found it out. Because I know how much pride I take when things are filmed in Atlanta, so I thought it must be nice to have that for Cleveland also.
Yeah.
So now we are going to move on to discussing our experiences with this film. So Hagen, can you remember the first time you saw this movie, and what was that experience like for you?
So I know I saw it like 2 or 3 times in theaters, mostly mm-hmm. just because it was in theaters for like so long. Mm-hmm. Like I know I'm not sure which was the first time, but I remember seeing it once with, like, my grandparents and, like, my sister and my cousins, mm-hmm. As, like, an 11-year-old or something, in which, at that point in time, I didn't really know that much about, like, a lot of, like, superhero backstories and stuff. I wasn't, like, that, like, super into it, mm-hmm. and so I remember, like, asking my cousin, like, all the, like, origin stories and stuff, because I hadn't seen like all of the precursing films. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. And then I saw it once just with like my family, and then I don't know, I feel like there's a third time in theaters, but I'm not sure. It might have just mm-hmm. been the two.
I feel like I saw it 3 times in theaters, but I'm not completely like clear on the memory of the third time. I know that the first 2 times I saw it twice in 2 days. I saw it the day it came out and the following day. And I didn't plan that, even though I totally am the type of nerd that would do that. But I saw it opening day with my family. And then the following day, my mom's best friend, who had a son who was like a year or two younger than me, so we would go see movies together a lot, like called my mom, was like, hey, we're going to go see Avengers. Do you guys want to go? And my mom's like, we just saw it yesterday. I don't think I can do it again. And I was like, I'll go. And so just tagged along with
this. Do it again.
Yeah. I was like, who are you, Denise? Like, disowned. And I tagged along and saw it for a second time in 2 days. So are you laughing because I said I was going to disown my mother?
Yes. And that you called her by her first name and that whole
it added sentiment. It added to the alliteration. Her name's Denise. So anyway, so I saw it twice in 2 days, and I can remember pretty much being in awe of it when it first came out, because I was I just turned 14, I think this came out, yeah, 2012, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought that this was like the coolest thing ever put on film, that they managed to bring all these characters from all these individual movies together, because I had like tracked it pretty heavily, like through all the individual films. Like, I can remember we didn't do an episode on The Incredible Hulk for obvious reasons, but I did like The Incredible Hulk when it first came out. And Hagen, I was a child, okay? I thought it was so good. And I think it's because it was the first movie I'd ever seen with like that much like violence in it. I don't know. I don't know.
You're saying a lot about young Kylo right now.
We're not going to get into all that. But I really liked it. And the post-credit scene with Iron Man visiting General Ross. I was in awe, thought this was like the craziest thing that they were managing to like pull all these movies together. And so I just thought the Avengers was like the pinnacle of movie going. And obviously there are those who don't feel that way. And I'm not even saying that I feel that way still to this day, but it was a very special experience. And I'll never forget it. And I think that they've managed to top it many times since. Also, like, they still manage to give you that feeling that like you're witnessing something that's just like incredible that they've managed to pull it off.
Yeah, they're very good about building the hype.
Mm-hmm. So how many times do you think you've seen this movie total now, Hagen?
I'd say around 10 or mm-hmm. so, I feel like is pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say around 10.
That's a fair estimate. I feel like mine is probably right around there too. I do think that prior to rewatching it for this episode, I probably had gone the longest period of time that I had gone without rewatching it. Because I can remember there was a point in time where the thing to do before each new installment of like a Marvel movie came out was to rewatch all of the old ones.
Oh, yeah.
But then there got to be so many that you couldn't realistically rewatch all of them, you know, unless you started right. like a month in advance. So I haven't revisited this one in a long time, but I'm really glad that I did for this episode, because I think, you know, as we'll get into later on, it holds up really well, all things considered.
Yeah, no, it definitely does.
So now I'm going to ask you, Hagen, what's your pit and what's your peak of the Avengers?
Interesting. So I feel like some of the best things for me were like the transitions in the beginning. Like, I just thought they started the movie so well. I mean, well, okay, like not like the beginning, but like, you know, once they were like doing all the introductions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Thor versus Hulk in like the helicarrier thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good scene. I mean, the final battle is like, you know, it's cool.
You know, it's cool.
But like in the end, my two favorites are the Iron Man and Loki like threatening scene, and then the Hulk just like decimating Loki into the ground. Uh-huh. Puny god. Uh-huh. And yeah, so those are all like, you know, my top scenes, I feel like. As far as least favorites, I'd say as a kid, this just sticks with me, even though like I like it more now, but just as a kid, I just really like the Coulson dying, and then mm-hmm. like the trading cards like really affected me as a child.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to stick with that as like my peak. I mean, my pit. My pit.
Yeah. Yes, that's my pit.
That was not a peak.
It's my pit as well. Like, it doesn't matter how many times I watch it. That's always just going to be like this gulfing pit for me. Especially even more so than the actual scene in which his death supposedly occurs, the scene where Fury is like confronting Steve and Tony.
Right.
And he throws the cards, and it just, whew, it's still like, it still kind of got to me a little bit, even as a 22-year-old, where I was like, oh, okay, I'm not over this, even though I know he's alive. Like, it's still, and I had forgotten I might be a bad Marvel fan, but I had forgotten that it's like kind of a ruse that Nick Fury went and got the cards out of his locker to pack that emotional wallet for Cap. So that also like hit different this time too.
Yeah. Okay. One of the other things I'll say is that like, okay, I guess this is like adding on to the like pit, but like every time I rewatch it, like since knowing that that's, you know, how it goes, like I'm really bothered by how like I know Captain America's going through like, you know, his whole like 70 years of displacement or whatever, but like it always bothers me how he's supposed to be this like great guy, but he's just like annoyed at like the person who's idolizing him the most throughout the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm just mm-hmm. like, dude, like how hard is it to just like
sign his trading cards,
right? Like I you know, because like I don't know, maybe he feels super out of place and it doesn't help, but I feel like I don't know, it's just it did not help me like appreciate his character, you know. No, like I'm just like, this is not what you're supposed to be.
I completely agree. And it's a trope that I always take issue with when like the hero is seemingly like bothered by or finds the people who adore them to like be somewhat of a nuisance. Like, did you read Harry Potter growing up?
No, I did not. Yes.
Well, Hagen, people don't know us. Like, I have to start everything with a leading question. Okay, so you know how Harry is so dismissive of Colin Creevy and finds him so annoying?
Yeah.
That bothered me so much as a kid and still bothers me to this day. I'm like, this kid worships the ground you walk on, Harry, and you can't give him the time of day. And like, I understand that it could be like somewhat disruptive to your life to have someone like following you around. And I'm not trying to get into the weeds of the Harry Potter Colin Creevy discourse here, but like because I saw this movie because I had experienced the trope there, like in Harry Potter, I always found the way Cap is somewhat dismissive of Coulson to like remind me of that on some level. And it just bothered me that he was like dismissive.
Right. Yeah. The dismissiveness is really, it's frustrating, especially when there's like, especially for me in the like Coulson setting where it's like the guy, like he doesn't like, sure, I'm sure he'd love to be like Cap's friend, but like, his real thing, he just like wants a signature and like just wants to like coexist and like get past this awkward like adoration, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like such a simple thing that Cap can do to defuse the situation, and he just like dismisses it. I'll give Harry a pass because one, he's 12, and two, like Colin like is not just obsessed with him, but like Harry doesn't understand what he's done yet. You know, like he's like he's still annoyed at special treatment from anyone. He's like, he wants to just be normal. He's not in this like I'm an adult hero figure yet. Like he hasn't come into that. And on top of that, Colin doesn't just like want a signature or a picture. Like he wants to like be there for everything. He wants to be like his friend. And it's just like, you know, Harry's admittedly turned off by the idea of like this person just wants to be my friend because of like the things they've read about me. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I think he grows with it a lot better, you know, as well, which is kind of the point of getting older than 12 and dealing with fans. So
mm-hmm.
I feel like it's not quite a fair comparison, but I understand why you brought it up.
Yeah, it's not the exact same situation, but the vibes are similar.
Right, right. No, I felt the need to defend him in this.
Okay, well, hashtag justice for Colin Creevy, and I will now give my peak, which I still have not done somehow.
Okay.
My peak, and this has always been my peak from me being a 14-year-old seeing this for the first time. It's the scene where Black Widow...
That's it.
How'd you know?
Well, because you started talking about, like, as a kid, and then I was like, oh, I know exactly that this is going with Black Widow. And
what scene am I going with, Hagen?
She's like, I'm in the middle of an interrogation. And they just, like, look at each other. It's not that scene?
No.
Really?
That is one of my favorite scenes, okay. And I will talk about it at great length later on. But I actually prefer, you were so on the right track, like, I'm not even faulting you because you do know how my brain works really well, obviously. But it's the scene where she's talking to Loki. And Loki thinks that he has her, and he's like snarling at her and talking about like just describing in great detail how he's gonna have Barton murder her and then wake him up from the trance to recognize what he's done before he kills him. And she's like, "You're a monster." And he's like, "No, you brought the monster." And she's like, "Oh, so that's your plan?" And just like completely turns on him 180. Mm-hmm. And like you realize that she had been the one manipulating him the entire time.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so, so good.
Okay.
Do you take issue?
No, I don't take issue. Like, I actually like wasn't 100% sure that that happened when I rewatched it, like, until it did, you know what I mean? I was like, I was a little confused. I'm like, I don't remember her getting like emotional, and then I was like, oh, that's why. I do always remember the other scene, the like, I'm in the middle of an interrogation,
they're giving me everything I need. Yeah,
right. Yeah, so like, okay, I feel like those are very similar, so I'm gonna consider my guess still pretty accurate,
partially right. They are very, very similar. The issue with the reason I think I like the Loki one more is that like you genuinely think that he has gotten the better of her, whereas like in the interrogation scene, even going into it, I was like, nah, she's in control here, you know?
Right, or at the very least, you know, she's gonna break out. Like, yeah, there's no, you're right, there's no mystery in that scene.
Mm-hmm. But it is still a very good scene that we will talk about when we get to character intros. Worry not. But before we get to intros, I want to ask you, do you have any favorite shots from this movie, Hagen?
I think, okay, I don't know if this really counts, but just the way, I think a lot of their transitions are like some of my favorite shots. But so like, one of them is definitely when they find out that like Loki's like set up the Tesseract like at Stark Tower, and he's like, mm-hmm. someone who wants like their name, like a monument with their name on, and then he's like and then like it pans right to the tower. Like, I love that scene.
Mm-hmm. I have quite a bit. I'm sure that there are a bunch you could name too, and I'm sure that we're gonna overlap on some of them. I'll just start and go through chronologically, and feel free to jump in at any point, okay. Hagen. I really like the first shot of Loki when he first shows up. Like, he's got his like chin like against his chest and is just kind of like smirking, and it's just a very telling shot. I feel
he has the hungry look, one might say.
The hungry look. Refer to our Thor episode if you would like to know where that comes from. And then I like in the scene you were just talking about where Natasha has concluded her interrogation and she's talking on the phone. She picks up her heels and there's just like a close-up on her heels dangling from her fingers. And it's just a very interesting shot that like really drives home the dichotomy between like how feminine she can be and how deadly.
Right.
Which I really enjoy. And there's also a really good close-up on her gun when she's pointing it at Banner when she goes to retrieve him, where like it looks three-dimensional even when you're not watching the movie in 3D.
That's why I really like a lot of the scenes with Mark Ruffalo, and just the way he like plays with the like the whole hinting at, you know, later he's like, I'm always angry, and like punches the thing. But like, mm-hmm. there's so many awesome hints of that where he's like just toys with the people and he like snaps at them. But when he knows he's still in control, but he snaps at them and they just like freak out. Like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, this guy might go Hulk smash on us, uh-huh. you know? And then he's like, just you and me, huh? And then it pans out and all the people like stand down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that, and then I really like I was waiting for it this time. The scepter when they're all kind of arguing and then they're like, Dr. Banner, put the scepter down or something like that. And like I knew it was coming up and I was waiting and I was really trying to watch to see if there was any indication of him picking it up. And they just kept the shot like at his shoulders and above for so long, whereas everyone else it's like waist up. And then when they finally did show it, I just thought that was like really well done.
It is. And that whole scene, like, I love the way the camera, like, it discombobulates you as a viewer, too. Like, the way it maneuvers around
right,
the room.
It adds into
like,
the chaos.
Upside down. And, yeah. It's so good. I also like, in the scene that I was discussing earlier where Loki is berating Nat, you can see his, like, reflection, like, looming right next to her. Which this movie, it does some interesting things with like reflections and screens and things. I like the blood covered cap trading cards. It's a good
you
shot
like
from under the table. It's a good shot from under the glass table. Like you have to admit. And the way they just like fan out and the blood is dripping. Like,
I wonder how many times he tossed them for that to happen.
Oh, definitely a bunch. Like there's no way that just happened first shot. If it did, it was like nothing short of miraculous. I like Thor in the field when he's like, you know, picks up the hammer and is like swirling the clouds and everything. It's just good. Why are you laughing at me?
No reason. Continue.
Okay. This one has to be on both of our lists, but the spin in New York with the theme mounting in the background. And you see, like, each of them preparing in their own way for the onslaught.
Do you have any issues with this scene at all?
Okay. Hagen's forcing me to show my cards early. I love Natasha Romanoff. Love Black Widow. But watching this scene back, she's just loading a Sig Sauer. Like, she straight up is loading a gun that I could have in my possession right now. I'm like, what are you gonna do with that, Natasha? I understand that she has heightened combat skills. I get it. But, like, straight up, everyone else has, like, supernatural, otherworldly powers or objects that enable them to do, like, crazy miraculous things. And homegirl has a handgun.
And it's just the way they like spin around and it's like with the shield or like Hulk like roaring and like Thor swinging the hammer and like even Hawkeye's at least like knocking an arrow, which like no one else is probably really capable of. And then she's just like,
like, I could do it right now. Like, that's what bothers me most of all, is that I could go out and have what Black Widow has in the Battle of New York. No, like, I know she's got, like, her little, like, Widow's Bites wristlets or whatever. But, like, we don't really see her using those. We see her shooting the gun. So, that's my issue with that scene. And, again, I love Black Widow. As a kid, she was my favorite. I just think that it's really funny watching these movies back as an adult. And I told Hagen, I watched these movies recently with a friend of mine, Joe, who had never seen any Avengers movies. And he was like, we went and saw, is it Infinity War or Endgame where she talks such smack? It's Infinity War, isn't
it?
Yeah. Sorry, it's been a long time since I've rewatched those. I obviously will get to those before we do those episodes, listeners. But Natasha talks some mad crap at the little parlay with Thanos' minions in Wakanda. And my friend Joe leaned over and was like, is she really in a position to do that? He was like, she's just a normal mortal human woman with a gun. And I was like, yep, exactly. So it's Joe's commentary watching these movies with him for the first time has kind of made me reevaluate. I'm like, should Black Widow be in these situations? Discuss.
Well, especially when like Scarlet Witch shows up and is basically like the same person that has like the hair and like an Eastern European accent, but just has like the strongest powers out of any Avenger. And it's like, there's Natasha with.
There's Natasha.
You know, she can jump and kick someone.
Her power is that she's played by Scarlett Johansson. Like, that's what keeps
that's
her
very
relevant.
True. No, that's very true.
I just, yeah. So that's my bone to pick with that shot. It's still genuinely, arguably, possibly the most iconic shot.
Oh, yeah. I
of
think
the 2010s.
Yeah. I was not going to go that far, but I think it might arguably be the most iconic shot of the movie very easily.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most iconic shot in Marvel. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we'll come back to that by the time we finish all of our rewatching.
Okay, that's true too. Like, I could be forgetting very important shots in Infinity War and Endgame right now.
Yeah, because I just feel like if there's something similar, then it's probably just by nature a little more iconic. But who knows?
But this is the OG, so we'll discuss when we get there.
But also, the music, I will say, like, I forgot. I really like the classic just Avengers like theme music. I think it really adds to like all the transitions in the beginning where they're like panning to each person and then like that type of thing too. Cause it's not like, it's not this epic battle music. It's just this kind of like setup music and it like gets you ready. So I like it.
I agree. A few other shots that I wanted to make mention of. I really like the tracking shot of Hawkeye's exploding arrow. Like how the camera follows it. I think that's a brilliant shot.
The one that like he shoots out at the helicarrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like the shot of Tony's eyes and you can see like Pepper's image in the mask.
When he's trying to call her.
Yes. Also, him trying to call her, he is so different. it was emotionally affecting back in 2012, I'm sure. But knowing what we know now, having seen Endgame, it just, whew, okay, moving on. I also like the shot of Iron Man's mask clattering on the New York street after Thor throws it off of Tony. I don't know why. I just like, cause like the shot, his mask is in the foreground. And I just like it a lot. And like they're huddled around him, you know?
Yeah.
And then have to mention all of the Avengers, like standing over Loki. It's a good shot. I mean, like, you have to mention that. You know, he's got the arrow pointed directly at him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just good. So now, do you have any favorite lines, Hagen?
I'm just blanking now. Yeah, okay. So we'll just say, like, pretty much every line spoken by Robert Downey Jr. Like, wait, so it's Phil now?
His first name is Agent.
Right. Yeah.
What is the precise fraction when he's like, I thought we were having a moment. Well, I can't think of the fraction right now. This is
having
12%
of a moment.
Yes. 12%. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then and you know, he enters in after he's like, am I the only one who did the reading? And then like, Banner starts talking. He's like, "Ah, finally, someone that speaks English." Is that what just happened? And I really like the when Fury mentions like the flying monkeys and like how like pointedly excited Cap is. He's like, "I get that. I got that reference." And everyone just kind of looks at him like, "Okay, bud."
Supposedly, Chris Evans was really concerned about that line because he didn't want Captain America to come off as dumb. Like, he wanted it to be funny, but he didn't want it to be, like, Cap was the butt of, like, a mean joke, you know? And so he said once he, like, saw, like, test audiences react to it, he, like, realized that it was a good line, and he was glad they left it in.
Right. I think especially, you know, people have to understand the context, right? Like, because it's not just, the way it looks is it's just, like, someone, like, pointing at Thor, like, ha, I get this reference that you don't, Asgardian. But, like, when you know the context, it's like, this is finally a reference that this guy out of time actually understands. And so it works really well. So I like it. Let's see. What other lines? Feel free to, like, hop in with some of yours.
I like, there's a lot I like. I gotta mention, genius billionaire playboy philanthropist.
Oh, yeah. And, like, okay, no. The other thing is when he does that, though, like, Nat is, like, in the shot, and she just kind of, like, does like a little like shrug thing, like good uh-huh. response. Uh-huh.
She's like, he kind of is like, right. And like, you know that it kind of pains her to even give him credit where it's due, but she's right. doing it. So I like it. I also like when Tony's like, the next one's going to say pots. And he's like on the side and she's like on the lease. And he's like, call your mom. Can you bunk over? It's good.
Yeah.
Another one, a great Steve line. There's only one God, ma'am. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
I also like, what was it? When like Banner is, he's crash landed and the guy's like giving him some clothes and he's like, so are you an alien? And he's like, what? Like, you know, I don't know exactly how, cause he's like, you know, like from outer space. And he's like, oh, nah, you have a condition.
That's a really good one. I like to, probably my favorite Thor line is when he's like,
oh,
talking about Loki, and he's like, but he is yeah. of Asgard and he is my brother. And Nat goes, he killed 80 people in 2 days. And Chris Hemsworth, just perfect delivery. He's adopted.
This is a perfect throwback to our discussion in the Thor episode about just how he brings the humor
exactly
into
exactly.
his lines.
I think I appreciated a lot of his lines, like, even more on this rewatch, having the knowledge from our Thor episode that, like, his delivery 9 times out of 10 is just him genuinely being that funny. Right. And not him being, like, directed to give that performance.
Right. I think, and that's, I mean, same sort of thing with, like, Robert Downey Jr. Of course, that's a little bit less surprising coming from him, but, like, mm-hmm. just knowing that it's, like, the actors just, like, going with the flow and doing what they think feels right. Instead of, you know, being told to do it and having just a slightly, you know, less good, like, effect or whatever. I just think it pays off really well.
It does. It definitely does. I mean, we could go all day with lines. But I know that
I don't think Cap said that he could go all day in this movie. Did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't. What a letdown.
Yeah,
I should make that a sound effect for this series that I can go all day, like whenever we just start going like for a long time on one topic.
Yeah.
But I know that we want to talk about the transitions and the intros of the different characters. So I do want to mention one line that I really like that leads into that.
Okay.
Which is when Steve asks Loki, what's the matter? Scared of a little lightning? And Loki responds, I'm not overly fond of what follows.
Yeah.
Which just...
But yes. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. But okay, going with the transition theme here, speaking of Cap, mm-hmm. I really like, you know, Fury is talking to him, and then he's like, so like, anything we should know about the Tesseract? You should have left it in the ocean. And then it just pans to the ocean in like a robotic sense. And it's like, oh, like, this is weird. I thought they already found the Tesseract, but it's just Tony like doing uh-huh. something for the reactor mm-hmm. for his introduction. And I thought that was a very good transition.
There's lots of great transitions, but like you pointed out, the transitions very early in this film as we're introducing each character, like, are just flawless. They're handled so well. So you mentioned the one that springs to mind most vividly for me, which is the Tony one, but there's the wars are won by soldiers, and then the transition to Cap, you know, going at the bag.
That was really good, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many strong transitions early on, and there's so many strong character intros. So I wanted to ask you, which Avenger do you think has the best intro in this movie?
Ooh.
I mean, it's not Hawkeye. We can just be honest.
No, it's not Hawkeye. I don't know. I think it's either Nat's or Banner's, because I didn't really see either coming. Mm-hmm. Like, just as a kid when I watched it, I was like, I mean, like, sure, I assumed that, like, Black Widow was fine, but, like, I didn't know exactly where it was going. And it was just, like, it was really fun and, like, lighthearted And then with the Hulks, it was really good because it, like, especially as a kid, I like genuinely did not expect like the kid to then just like disappear through a window. And so I thought that was really good. And just the whole, like, the stop lying to me, you know,
And then I'm sorry, like totally normal.
Right. Because, you know, he's just playing with her as much as they think they're playing with him. And of course the transition to that, where she's on the phone with Coulson and he's like, all right, like you got the big guy. And she's like, Stark. And he's like, no, I've got Stark. You've got the big guy. And then it transitions into that, which I think is also equally important considering that, you know, this is a newly cast actor for the role of the Hulk. So I think they did a really good job with that.
I think you're right. I think my toss up, though, for my two best intros were Nat. Because, like, you gotta give her credit. Like, it's so good. And I also, like, I like that we both, as kids, were like, no, she's fine. But, like, really, all we had ever seen her in at this point was Iron Man 2, which, as you pointed out in us just discussing things off the air, like, is very low stakes. Like, when you see Black Widow just tearing through that hallway of security, like, it's super impressive. But, like, how serious is it really in the grand scheme of things? But I like how we were just like, no, she's bad A enough that, like, she's fine here. Like, this is clearly a setup, which it was. But I think that Thor has a really good intro, too. Him just, like, the thunder and Loki's line followed by him just, like, appearing on the jet. So
yeah, I feel like his is a little predictable. I don't know if that's just because, like, I'm older now or not, but it's just, like, it's already later into the film, so I'm, like, out of the mindset of introductions, and then it's just like, oh, lightning, Thor, haha, you know?
I think that's why it stood out for me this time, though, is that it was, like, removed. Like, it wasn't in the sequence of, like, intro, 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 you know?
Right, that makes sense.
But I also am just, you know, I'm here for all the Thor content, so.
Shocking.
So speaking
of Thor. What, you didn't appreciate that pun?
It was pretty good. Coming from someone who has literally been struck by lightning. So speaking of Thor, though, I want to talk briefly about Loki's motivation in this movie.
Briefly? Like,
I mean, like, as long as it takes, but, I mean, we could sit here all day, and I don't know that we'd ever have a definitive answer, is the issue.
You could do this all day.
Yeah. Insert sound effect here. So, but, like, what is Loki's motivation in this movie? What is it that he wants, or is there something specific that he wants, or is he just delighting in causing chaos?
I think he's just enjoying being a rebellious teenager, honestly. Like, like, that's what it feels like. Like, because he had this, like, little thing where, I mean, in Thor, it was, like, he wasn't really originally planning on trying to take the throne from Thor. Like, sure, he was a little bit jealous, but he was just like, eh, you know, like, we're brothers, whatever. Like, I'm still in this, like, great life. And then, like, Thor's out of the picture, and he's like, huh, I have some power now. Like, not even intentionally. And then he becomes, like, power hungry. And then he gets, like, weirdly mad at Thor, but kind of for no good reason. And then, like, this happened, and he's like, aha, I will have the Earth. And then he has, like, some, like, regret in his face, you know, when he's talking to Thor at the end in Manhattan. And it's just, like, he's literally just enjoying causing trouble. You know, like, I don't think he has any end game in mind.
Pun intended. I feel like, and we've discussed this, and we mentioned this in our Thor episode as well, that Loki's, like, master plan would be more believable and would make more sense if there were a master plan, if he were going after Jane specifically in this movie, because his whole, like, Earth, I'll make Earth my footstool, like, they used to worship us like gods, they'll bow to me, like, that's all fine, but, like, it seems like his motivation is somewhat, like, a personal vendetta against Thor also, but, like, Eric Selvig just doesn't feel the gap there, you know?
Yeah, no, it's just really, having Selvig doing like his thing is just a little bit disappointing, because it's like the way, especially the way he's really introduced as like an important character, you know, as like, oh, like this guy's got Selvig, and then they're like, who, an astrophysicist? And Thor's like, a friend. But it's like, since when were you friends? Like, I didn't see that happen.
He told you, like, to get out of town.
Yeah, like he literally tried to like drive you away from this girl, and your reaction is, oh, we're friends now. Like, no, you just survived a crisis together, but you didn't even, like, you two didn't even explicitly work together, you know? Like,
right.
So it does not compute how they're friends. Like, they're not enemies.
I also feel like it, like the little aside that Coulson and Thor have, where Coulson's like, we took Jane to a safe house, like, that just reminds me that, like, she should be more central to the story. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it would have been better if they just wouldn't have mentioned it, because that scene makes me be like, oh, yeah, like, why isn't Jane central to this? Like, where, and also, like, is taking her to a safe house, like, really going to put Loki off the scent, you know?
Right, exactly. Like, if that's Loki's goal, then he can do that, you know? And it just, it doesn't really add up. Again, like, as a kid, I don't think I really noticed that whole aside thing, mostly because I didn't, you know, explicitly look for Natalie Portman to show up.
What was wrong with you?
I still don't. I just noticed it this time. Anyway. But, like, so the thing that I'm realizing, though, is, like, and especially the more you get into the MCU, is, like, Asgard is really like the door into, you know, more powerful beings, and because of this, the Thor, you know, individual movies are a little bit more relevant than some others seem to be in the grand scheme of, you know, the MCU plotline. And so with that in mind, it's like the characters from Thor are more important. Like, Loki is the villain, and he is, you know, the villain from Thor, right? And so the fact that you're not using those characters to the fullest extent just doesn't make as much sense. Like, even if Natalie Portman wasn't in it, but they just, like, made it as if Jane was, like, a part of this thing going on as well, it would have just made more sense.
Yeah, I agree. Because it's also, like, why did we make her an astrophysicist? Like, because the role that Selvig is fulfilling here just feels like it very easily could have been written for Jane, and then Selvig just had to fulfill it, you know?
Right. Yeah. And also, oh, I was going to say something. But also, it's just because, like, the way Thor ends, and it's just like he has this attachment to the Earth and has this attachment to her specifically, you know? And they're all like, he's watching her, like, she's working on her, a way back to him or something like that, you know? And it's just like, there's this whole, like, conversation about that, and then it just shows zero relevance.
Also, right, and also the fact that Thor is literally on Earth and doesn't, like, call or anything, which comes up in the Dark World, and I will talk about in that episode, I'm sure. But I just, like, it's so ridiculous to me that, like, if he was as, like, obsessed with her as we are led to believe he is at the conclusion of the first Thor movie, like, I understand that he needs to take Loki back to Asgard to stand trial, but, like, he could have reached out to her while he was on Earth.
Right.
They don't even have to show it. Like, but it, we could just know that it happened.
Right, like, so, if instead of doing the aside with Coulson, he could just be like, I have checked up on Jane. She is blah 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 with the son of Cole, you know? Like,
yes.
it would have worked just as easily.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry that I've gotten us off on yet another Natalie Portman related tangent. That was not my intention at all. Genuinely, this time it was not. So you can look at my notes. At no point does it say insert Natalie Portman tangent here. So now I'm going to ask Hagen, what aspects of this film do you think are handled well, in your opinion, other than the ones we've noted previously?
What aspects?
Yeah.
I think there were some pretty good fight scenes. Like, I mean, we already discussed, like, the Thor and the Hulk one was good. I thought they did a pretty good job. It was really kind of actor dependent, I feel like, on who got, like, good choreography. Like, I know I'm supposed to be talking about good things, but I personally think almost all of Cap's scenes were kind of poorly choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were very lazily done. They were a little bit too cartoony, you know?
Mm-hmm. Are you blaming, like, Chris Evans for this?
No, I'm not blaming him. I think it was the choreography given to him.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, like, I mean, clearly he's capable of doing more than just, like, you know, I mean, in a lot of the stuff, it just looked a little bit fake. And I don't know if it was stuff that he did or the stunt double did. But either way, it's just like, I feel like he could have gotten a lot better choreography because, you know, Chris Hemsworth got very good choreography for a lot of the, like, fight scenes and, like, stunt type stuff he or his stunt double did, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And same with, like, Romanoff and, like, Hawkeye. I mean, I guess Tony, but Tony just does a lot more, like, flying around, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the fight choreography as a whole is something that I feel like Marvel found their footing with slightly later than this movie.
Yeah.
Not that the choreography isn't okay here, but, like, overall, just, like, everything to do with the fight scenes, I feel like Marvel improved upon greatly after this movie.
Absolutely. I fully agree with that. Yeah. So I guess that's not one of the aspects they did well with.
Yeah. But I'm glad you brought it up because my next question was going to be, like, what are things that you think, having rewatched, that Marvel found their footing with later on in the process? So that
right.
counts.
Yeah. But so back to the things I think they did well with. I think they're... One of the things they've always been good at, and they continued, is their inclusion of dialogue and, you know, humor throughout the fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout, you know, any intense scene, just incorporating humor in a really good way. And this has a lot to do with the actors as well. But there's so many other, you know, high stakes action type sci-fi movies that just, like, would be so much better if they could just add that little bit of, you know, humor throughout those types of high stakes situations, and the sarcasm that they do a really good job with, like, all the way starting with, you know, the first Iron Man. And they continue to do that here. Like, you know, he's offering, you know, when he's threatening Loki, he's, you know, not bargaining, whatever, threatening. You sure you don't want that drink? Performance issues. You know, so, like, just that one instance had, like, three different good jokes in it on its own, you know. And I just think that's something they're always good at.
And it's something that Marvel, like you said, like, it's a thread that Marvel has woven all throughout their saga. And I do think it's a testament to the actors that they cast in these roles that they are that, like, fluid in their performances that they can go from, like, a scene in which the stakes are so high, but still manage to land those comedic punches too.
Right. And I was going to say, okay, so then another thing that I just think didn't really hold up, but, like, I don't know, they never really fixed this that much either. But now I noticed this for the first time when I watched, like, the Honest Trailers thing on YouTube for the Avengers. Like, who knows how long ago, like, they don't have comms, like, they don't have communication devices in their ears, like, and they're just, like, somehow, like, all talking, like, do you copy, you got this, like, I'm doing, it's like, no, you don't, like, how are you talking to each other? That just is, ever since
Shield,
it was pointed out to me,
Shield
it's
has
always
very advanced technology where, like, it's hidden in their ears,
but,
so,
like,
it can't
Fury
be, like,
and, like, other agents almost always are, like, pulling either, like, a walkie or, like, they have an earpiece in, you know, but, like, they don't, and there's never a mention of this, and they never, like you said, they don't say, oh yeah, we have this technology thing, and, like, it makes sense for, like, Iron Man to have it, right? But, like, or even maybe Hawkeye or, like, Black Widow, if you're not really looking, it could make sense that they have, like, an extra gadget, but, like, I mean, any of them, it could make sense, but they're just, like, covering their ear and speaking. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's just, I just find it comical more than anything, as just like something they completely overlook. They're just like, yeah, we're gonna have them all talking in this high stakes situation as like, you know, their team communications, but we're not gonna give them an actual device to do that with and hope no one notices. Like, I don't even think it was that. I think they completely just didn't even think about needing it. And we're just like, yeah, pretend you're like talking to an earpiece. Without giving them a fake earpiece.
This is such a specific qualm to have with this movie, Hagen. But I now, you know, going forward, watching these movies, I'm going to be on the lookout. I'm going to be like, you know what? Where is the earpiece?
Right? It's just one of those things that you can't unsee it. So I'm sorry to all the people listening right now that hadn't seen it. Like, challenge yourself to look for it for all your future Marvel movie like experiences and any other similar type of movie. Honestly, like, I feel like this is a thing so many of them skip. They just like put their hand to their ear and start talking.
You've ruined it for me, Hagen. You've ruined the illusion. One more thing I want to ask you your opinion on is, like, what do you make of the representation of the council, like the giant screens that Nick Fury is talking to? You think that's just a well-handled visual, or how?
I think it's pretty poorly done. Like, we don't even know exactly who they are. Like, are they a US thing? Are they a SHIELD thing? Like, are they a UN thing? Like, you know, like, in the movie itself, they don't really tell you. They're just clearly higher ups even to Fury, but Fury's supposed to be the highest up, so who knows? And it's just like, and it throws an extra wrench into the system, which, sure, it's like the way they solve it with like the nuke, but it's also just throws a wrench into the system because there's a nuke going towards Manhattan. And it's like, it just, I don't know, it's not my favorite addition to the plot.
One very interesting fact is that the Pentagon refused to be involved in the shooting of this film, because they said that they couldn't reconcile the unreality of S.H.I.E.L.D. and our place in it, because they didn't like that it was ambiguous as to whether S.H.I.E.L.D. like is a national agency, an international agency, like how the U.S. fits in, and they didn't like the implication that like a U.S. military operation would answer to something outside of the U.S. government. And so I think it's funny that even like the Pentagon was like, no, we're bothered by this whole council thing. Like, isn't that really funny?
Yeah. Like, but like, it's also, I feel like it's kind of smart though that they didn't do anything with it, because like, also the idea of launching a nuclear weapon at Manhattan and being affiliated with that in any way, shape, or form is probably not the best media coverage. So
right. Yeah, all around good decision by the Pentagon. So now I want us to talk specifically about the characters featured in this movie, Hagen. And before we focus heavily on the core six, I want to ask, are there any background characters outside of the Avengers that you think bear mentioning here?
I mean, obviously Coulson and Fury.
Obviously. Possibly unpopular opinion, I love Agent Maria Hill. I think she's very cool, very underrated.
Yeah, no, I like her. So I must have watched, like, How I Met Your Mother on Netflix, like, after I had seen Avengers, you know? And I didn't really notice her or anything until, like, I want to say it might have been Civil War, where I noticed her, like, being, like, the same actor. And I was just like, huh? And so ever since then, honestly, like, I have a hard time taking her seriously just because I've seen, like, 9 seasons of her in a sitcom, you know? But, like, I still, like, I like her as an actress, and it's just, like, it's a hard time taking her seriously as, like, some combat person and not, you know, picturing her sitcom role.
Sorry, Kobe Smulders, to say this out loud. This is me just totally betraying all of my feminist values and saying this, Kobe Smulders, every time I see her, I can't think of her as anything other than Taryn Killam's wife. And it's because I'm, I like, this was at the height of my Saturday Night Live obsession. For listeners who don't know, I am officially Saturday Night Live's biggest fan. If you want to hear more about that, reach out to me on social media. But one of my favorite Saturday Night Live Not Ready for Primetime players of all time is Taryn Killam. And for those of you who don't know, Taryn Killam is also Jordan Cahill in the phenomenal Disney Channel original movie Stuck in the Suburbs. But so because I like Taryn Killam holds such an important place in the forefront of my brain, Kobe Smulders just kind of fits in as Taryn Killam's wife, even though I've seen How I Met Your Mother. And so like every time she does something cool as Maria Hill, I'm like, that's Taryn Killam's wife. So that's my bad. I apologize to you publicly, Kobe Smulders, that's how I think of you. So that's me just completely betraying everything. But she's cool. All that to say, Agent Maria Hill, very cool. But okay, real talk, what separates her and Nat? Truly, like, other than
one was trained as like a 5-year-old by Russian spies,
but I mean, like, skill set wise,
one has red hair,
exactly. Which, like, I'm again, no knock on Nat, Black Widow is one of my favorite superheroes of all time, even though she's not really a superhero, but
well, especially the fact that she's a SHIELD agent is the thing, you right. know. If Nat were still some sort of like assassin or whatever that was sometimes worked with SHIELD but wasn't like an official agent, it would be different. But the fact that they're both agents
exactly
makes it, yeah.
And that Joss Whedon's decision to make Nat and Barton like the liaisons between SHIELD and the Avengers, like, I understand why he went that way, but I do feel like it forces their characters to feel like less super in some way, you know.
It definitely does. No, it definitely does.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to say anything else about Fury and Coulson before we move on to the Avengers?
I feel like Coulson had a lot more lines in this than I remember him having.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is a good thing. I just didn't remember him having that much except for like a little bit of Cap like fan girling, you know, and then the whole like death scene.
Mm-hmm. So that's what it does.
Hmm?
So that's what it does.
Yeah,
another good line we didn't mention earlier.
Okay. But yeah, he gets more lines. I guess the only other character that's like coming to mind right now to really mention is Loki. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, I think he's such a compelling villain in the sense of, like, he's a really good, like, I mean, just Tom Hiddleston just does a really good job with him. Mm-hmm. That's all. Like,
but you know, he's, like, deriving such immense joy from the chaos he's creating. It's just right. A very interesting take. Yeah.
Right. Like, he's not trying to, like, kill or, like, I mean, sure, he wants to rule, but, like, he's not one of those people that's, like, world domination. He's just, like, having fun with the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a little bit of a refreshing take. And then also, like, I just want to mention, like, Pepper, because, like, she's Pepper.
Yeah, she's good. Just all around solid. Did Gwyneth Paltrow know she was in this movie? Discuss. You've seen that video, right, Hagen?
No.
You haven't seen the video where Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't, like, she clearly doesn't know what Marvel movies she's been in? John Favreau and her are talking, and she's like, I wasn't in Spider-Man. And he's like, yes, you are. And she's like, no, I was in Iron Man, and I was in the Avengers. I was not in Spider-Man. And John Favreau is like, you remember those scenes we did with Tom Holland? Yeah, he's Spider-Man. And she was like, oh. And I'll send you the link. I'll put the link in the show notes, too, for those of you who haven't seen it. It's so funny. Gwyneth Paltrow is a national treasure.
That is great.
So I wanted to ask Hagen, before we jump into discussing each of the main actors, can you remember who was your favorite out of this original 6 lineup the first time you saw this movie?
So originally my favorite was Hawkeye, and I'm not really sure why anymore, because now he's like probably my least favorite.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting because not many kids gravitate to Hawkeye, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I really don't know why it was. I think I liked the whole, like, him being, like, Loki's sidekick and then, like, not being his sidekick. And the I remember the whole, like, stealing the eye thing being way cooler as, like, an 11-year-old than it is now.
It seem, like, so menacing when I was younger, and now I'm like, oh, okay.
It's just, like, all the things he did, like, from the shooting the arrows, the explosions, the, like, you know, the fist fighting, all of it seemed so much cooler as an 11-year-old, but now it just doesn't hold up, whereas all the other characters only got better, and I feel like he only got worse. And had less and less to do with the plot of future movies.
As much crap as we give it, Hawkeye's got some interesting stuff in Age of Ultron.
That's my only comment on that. But like, I don't know. I mean, like, sure, like, he has a plot line and it's supposed to be important and compelling throughout the rest of the MCU. But just for me, I feel like the other characters just grow so much more than he does. And like one by one, they just each like passed him on my list. And like, cause he like never really did anything like exceptionally cool to continue rising, but all the others did. And so now he's just like a little bit lackluster to me.
That's fair.
Which also probably comes with the territory of not having superpowers, but, you know.
Well, that's my favorite. When I saw it as a kid, undoubtedly it was Black Widow. Like, I just thought she was the coolest thing. And I don't dislike Black Widow now. That's not what I'm saying at all. And I'm so
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's almost impossible to, like, dislike a Scarlett Johansson character, so.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, we can, like, Scarlett Johansson as a person, people can take their knocks at, but, like, Scarlett Johansson characters are just inherently pretty likable.
Right.
And I still like Black Widow, and I'm super excited for her standalone movie. Like, really, coronavirus messed me up, because I was so pumped for that.
Right, that's the only problem you have with coronavirus.
Right. I have a lot of problems with coronavirus, but I just... Like, she's by no stretch of the imagination one of my least favorites now. She's still in my top three, I would say.
Okay.
But she was far and away my number one when this first came out in 2012. And yeah, so it's interesting to me that we both as kids gravitated to the two without powers.
Right. Well, I think at the time it might have felt more attainable or more like,
right, like something it was accessible, like I could become Black Widow, yeah.
Right, and then also it was still, like, the effects hadn't, you know, been, I mean, the special effects only get better from this point on, but that really only helps you if you have powers, you know? Like, there's only so much effects are going to do for someone that power is running and jumping and kicking. And so, yeah, it's just...
And it's kind of like, I just feel... Like, don't get me wrong, Black Widow has had cool sequences, like, in the newer movies, but I just feel like her coolest sequence remains that Iron Man 2 trip down the hallway, you know? Like, it's like, once you've seen her go ham on a hallway full of guys, like, how much higher can you go from there?
Right, because she never really does anything except similar events to that, you know?
Right.
Whereas these other characters can unlock new powers, you know,
right?
Or new ways to use their powers, and there's only so many ways you can take down five different guys just using your fists.
Exactly. So since we've already kind of gotten into it, let's just go through one by one and talk about these characters and the actors portraying them. So let's start, since this is his introduction to this role, let's start with Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner.
I think he is such a good Bruce Banner slash Hulk, just because, like, I mean, he's just so good at doing that, you know, like, tired, like, guy vibe, you know, where he's just done with everything, and he still has, like, the sass behind it, though, and just that, like, crankiness to it, you know? And mm-hmm. so he really plays into that, like, I'm always angry thing, you know? Like, you can see it. That's always there. But at the same time, he just, I don't know. I could go on for a while. I think he does a really good job, bottom line.
Had you seen The Incredible Hulk prior to seeing this movie as a kid, Hayden?
No, I don't think so.
So, I had seen The Incredible Hulk, and as I already confessed to earlier in this episode, really, really enjoyed it. I haven't rewatched it in a really long time, so I can't say whether or not that's an opinion I stand by, but I'm going to go with probably not. But I did really like Edward Norton's portrayal as Bruce Banner, and so I was predisposed somewhat against Mark Ruffalo's portrayal. So as a kid, I remember not really like paying super close attention to it because I was like, this isn't the Hulk that I know and love. So I was very taken aback on this rewatch with just how much I liked Mark Ruffalo in this role. And I think it's all the qualities you already pointed out, like how he just seems so like truly exhausted and at the end of his rope. And it's believable when he's like, that's my secret cap. I'm always angry. And he endows the character with a lot of heart, which like it would have been easy not to do, I feel like. Because he's a guy with so much brain and so much brawn, like you don't really need heart, but he gives it to him anyway.
Right. It could have been such a two-dimensional character that just has the two sides, but he turned it into the three-dimensional character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that only the right actor could do, not just like the writing itself can't do that.
Yeah, I agree. So what about Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye?
Again, I think I'm just pretty indifferent, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I also do think, I mean, okay, nothing against him. I think having a younger actor probably would have done better in the long run.
Are you calling Jeremy Renner old?
No, but I'm just saying that, like, he, especially compared to some of the other actors in the Avengers, you know, Hawkeye, as someone who's, like, very much supposed to be this, like, insanely athletic person, you know, just, like, seeing him in some of the later films as he got, like, again, not old, but just, like, normally, like, middle-aged, and he's, like, aging well. I'm not saying, like, no insults meant to be at here.
Jeremy Renner's people are coming for you, Hagen. You've ticked off Natalie Portman, like, they're all coming for you.
Okay, no, I'm still a fan of Natalie Portman. I just have to, like, balance you slightly, and I'm a fan of Jeremy Renner, too. It's just that, like, I don't know, I feel like sometimes he just looks like a little bit older to be doing some of the things Hawkeye is doing. That's all.
Yeah, that's
fair. But in this movie, he does a good job with it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like all your criticisms are fair. I like coming out of this movie, I don't think anyone's like, oh, let's talk about Jeremy Renner's take on Hawkeye, you know, because he just doesn't,
like, he doesn't even do much with it.
Exactly. Like, even though, I was going to say, like, even though he's, like, Loki's henchman for part of the runtime, like, he still just doesn't have a ton to do in his acting, you know?
Right.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, you, okay. Well, I was just say, it's the same sort of thing how he's, like, you know, kind of introduced in Thor as well. It's just, like, all his lines, and I think a lot of this has to do with the writing, but he doesn't really get much opportunity to show much, like, character, you know? And this, again, goes to why he became not my favorite over time, is just because, you know, he just doesn't have that much opportunity to say or do much. They're just very one-dimensional lines in the middle of conflicts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, this, no. Or, you know, when he comes out of the whole mind control thing, just this classic, like, oh, yeah, I was, like, in my head, but not. And it's just like, okay, like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, they're not really doing anything like super innovative with the character. Like, they're just going through the motions of like, okay, this is the standard line of what he should say at this point in time.
Right.
I do think one thing that Jeremy Renner does well, which I guess this credit on both sides of the coin for this, I like his chemistry with ScarJo. I think that it's, like, believable. Like, their banter is believable. I truly believe that they have a past, that there's a story about
Budapest.
And so I just think that's handled well, and that they both do a good job with that. That, like, you believe that they've been partners in the past, that she owes him, that there is, like, love there. And I can remember, like, before the Age of Ultron twist being like, are they going to go in that direction? Like, is there something romantic there? And obviously they didn't go in that direction, and I'm okay with that. But, like, I feel like they left just enough on the table within this movie, like, as a singular picture, that you were like, okay, like, there's more there. I'd like to know about it.
Right.
So since we're already mentioning her, let's just go ahead to Scarlett Johansson.
Okay.
Do you have anything to say about her?
She does a really good job. Like, I don't know. I mean, we kind of already touched on that, but, like, sure, I feel bad for her character in the long run, in the sense, you know, how she doesn't have powers and stuff like that. But, like, Scarlett Johansson is box office. Black Widow is now going to be a box office hit when it comes out. Like, I think she always does a really good job with the character. And she always is kind of like a glue character.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I think she does a really good job with that. Like, her kind of sarcastic relation with all the individual Avengers, balancing them out. And she appears in a lot of their own individual films.
Yeah,
she does. So yeah, I don't know. I think she does a really good job.
I think she does too. I think, you know, there's a reason Scarlett Johansson became the highest paid actress in the world. And it's definitely because of her contribution to these movies. And, like, she's, what, like, the ninth highest grossing box office star of all time. And, I mean, like, Robert Downey Jr. and Samuel Jackson and a few others, like, rank ahead of her from these movies. But, like, there's something about ScarJo as Black Widow that just kind of feels, like you said, like, the glue, or, like, I don't know, like, when there's a lot of characters this is true of, but, like, when she shows up, you're like, okay, this is a Marvel movie now. You know what I mean?
Right. And it's also, she's one of the characters, or I guess actors, that she does such a good job with it that, like, I could not picture anyone else in that role.
Exactly.
Like, not even for a second, you know? Mm-hmm. And while I can say that for most of the Avengers, like, there's some where it's just, like, absolute, you know? And I think she's one of mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, and she is one that, I mean, we don't have to get into this right now. Obviously, we'll have our in-game episode, but, like, when ScarJo, like, fully steps away from the MCU, oof, that's gonna be, like, a true loss, and I'm gonna feel that one.
Yeah.
Not that I don't feel the others, but, like, there's just, she's just the glue, like you said. Like, you said it really well in making that comparison.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Hagen. So, now, I feel like we're fully in the weeds now, though, of the ones that, like, are so perfectly cast that we can't see other people in that role.
So, Chris Hemsworth?
Uh-huh. How'd you know?
Okay. I don't know. I just took a guess.
You're scaring me with how you follow my thought patterns.
But, yeah. Now, Chris Hemsworth, like, I mean, we touched on this a lot when we talked about Thor. So for anyone who wants to hear more, shameless plug to that episode. But, like, I mean, how can you picture anyone else as Thor? I know I can't. Like, just the little bits of, like, straight-faced humor that he puts in is just, like, that on top of it is, like, what makes him Thor, you know? Because, like, the character of Thor is, like, this just, like, go-crazy, barbarian-esque dude that's, like, practically invincible. And then because of that, he has the, like, you know, lighthearted Viking spirit or whatever. And, like, Chris Hemsworth just does such a good job capturing that. Like, I don't think, even if they did, like, a new, like, Avengers, like, I don't know, what's the, like, a reboot thing, like, in 20 or 30 or 40 years, and they recast, like someone else will not be able to do a better job.
I don't want to have to live through that, Hagen. Why did you just put that in my brain? Because I'm just seeing it now, and I'm like, nope, don't want it. And, like, I'm seeing, like, ScarJo and, like, Chris Evans, like, popping up as, like, cameos. Like, I don't want it.
We'll get to see if Chris Evans truly looks the same as, like, old Cap.
Uh-huh. I don't. But you're right. Like, again, we covered all of this in our Thor episode, but like, Chris Hemsworth just is Thor. And without Chris Hemsworth, I don't know that Thor has the humor that has come to define him so strongly for me and so many other viewers. And so I can't extricate Chris Hemsworth from Thor, and I don't want to. Like, I want him to be my Thor, you know?
Right.
So let's go ahead and move on to the other Chris of the hour, Chris Evans, since we already were making mention of him.
Okay. I think Chris Evans does a really good job playing the, you know, straight-faced soldier that's following orders, you know, and because of that, he does a really good job playing Cap. I personally don't think he's one of those, like, perfect matches. Now, I'm not saying that I can think of someone who would be better, but I feel like, mm-hmm. you know, like, he's not on the level of, like, Chris Hemsworth is Thor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think someone else could.
I feel like that's going to be a controversial statement, but I don't know that I don't disagree with you. I don't, but I think that a lot of people probably would disagree with both of us.
Well, I mean, like, I think he does a really good job with the role, and I think there's very few people that, you know, would do it the same. Like, no one would do it the same way he did. Mm-hmm. I just think it's not as, like, it's not like an 100% alignment. Like, I feel like it's more of like an 85-90% alignment.
It's not as definitive a take as like RDJ's Tony.
It's like, yeah, it's like when I see Chris Evans in something else, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
it's not one of those things where I'm thinking, like, I mean, like, me, sure, personally, I'm thinking, oh, that's Captain America, because like, I'm a Marvel fan more than I am, like, you know, someone who follows actors. So if I know who an actor is, I most likely knew them, you know, because they're in a movie before I knew their name. Mm-hmm. But like, it's not as much of like when I see other actors, you know, playing characters that are somewhat similar, you know, in a sense to Marvel roles they've fulfilled. And I'm just like, I'm like, yeah, like, this is the same actor because it's like, that's their character. Like, I feel like Chris Evans can do a lot of different roles in a, I don't know where I'm exactly going with this, but like,
but I understand. Yeah. Like, I'm picking up what you're putting down, because,
okay.
And I was going to even say, which, like, this probably isn't true for you. Did you see the Fantastic Four movies as a kid?
I did not.
Okay. So like, I knew Chris Evans as Johnny Storm, as the Human Torch, before I knew him mm. as Captain America. But I don't think that that is like my reason for agreeing with you, because I also knew like ScarJo as Mary Boleyn from the other Boleyn girl very strongly. Like, I very strongly associated her with that role prior to seeing her step into her role as Black Widow. And I also right. don't think that it's just because like Chris Evans is a great actor, because I think they're all pretty good actors. Like, I would
yeah.
put ScarJo on the same level of acting as Chris Evans, at least, if not even higher. Don't know that I would say she's higher. Don't come for me, Chris Evans stance, but I'm just saying. So like I just feel like people could like write off your like us saying like we don't necessarily definitively think of him as Cap first as being like, well, he's just a great actor. Like, I think they're all great actors. I think that there is some merit to what you're saying, that like, yes, I do think of him as Cap, but I don't know that I like think of him as Cap before I think of him as anything else, you know?
Right, right. Like, I think he's an actor where somewhere down the line in his career, he could more definitively be aligned to a different character in his future. Whereas I feel like at the very least, like Chris Hemsworth, like it would be very much shocked if he did another role in the future that became the role people think of him for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I completely get that. I agree. So since we have arrived, the man who I think most fully is tied to his character, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a no-brainer. I mean, I remember I was listening to like a podcast he was on like a couple of days ago, and just like the way he just talks about stuff, it's like, you know, like, wow, like this Iron Man guy is doing a really good job playing Robert Downey Jr., the actor. Like, mm-hmm. that's just how I feel when I see like him doing anything in normal life. So, I mean, look, Iron Man is the main character in the MCU saga. Mm-hmm. Like it is his, it is told through his lens. Mm-hmm. And they picked the perfect actor to do it. So it's pretty, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. RDJ just is Iron Man. Like he just is. And I read that he actually originally wanted the Avengers to like clearly be Tony's movie. And they actually like worked with that somewhat. And then when they like screened it, they were like, we don't think that this works as well. Like, let's like give everyone fairly equal screen time and everything. And that RDJ like acquiesced and was like, yeah, that's fine. But I would like to see the cut where it's Tony's movie.
Right. The fact that he would even ask for something like that, though. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. that's a Tony Stark thing.
Exactly. And I think, too, like, not, like, yes, diehard, like, comic book fans were aware of Tony Stark, but RDJ basically, like, plucked a comic book character from, like, relative obscurity and brought him to, like, the forefront of modern mainstream movie-going media, you know?
Oh, yeah, I mean, because all the biggest, like, comic book, like, superheroes, I feel like a lot more of the big ones were in DC comics. And then of, like, the big Marvel ones, like, obviously Spider-Man's, like, the biggest. And he's not even in here for, like, forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Thor is really big and stuff like that. Like, Iron Man was not, like, on that level of, like, renowned.
No. But Robert Downey Jr. made him everyone's favorite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now, Hagen, I want to ask, how does this film stack up against the Marvel films that were still to come at this point in time?
I think it set a really, really good precedent for especially the future Avengers films. They really did a good job incorporating, you know, all the different characters, merging all the plot lines. I think, you know, overall, there's a few standalones, and by standalones, I mean, you know, like the individual characters' movies that mm-hmm. are, you know, on the same level or better. And personally, I think that both Infinity War and Endgame, personally, I think were better than, you know, the original Avengers.
Why do you say like, personally, Hagen?
I don't know, because I'm worried that, like, people are going to have strong opinions about the original, and I don't need to be attacked for that. It was clearly better than Ultron. I'm not saying personally there. And so, no, I think it was really well done. Like, there's no major, like, gripes with it, you know? Yeah, I think it stacks up really well. And it shows because, like you said, it was the first one to, like, gross $1 billion. And if that didn't happen, like, who knows if it would have become the massive arc that it led to be. Mm-hmm. And I think this movie had a lot to do with it, and it was kind of the, you know, standard that future movies were kind of held to. And it's, I think it was at this point where the franchise became like, okay, every movie that comes out is gonna have a ton of hype, you mm-hmm. know. And it, yeah. This was like the turning point for that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm interested to see where this one ends up ranking in my overall MCU rankings, because it held up a lot better than I thought it was going to on this rewatch. Like, because it had been a while since I had seen it, I didn't know how well it was going to hold up. And then as I was watching, I was pleasantly shocked. So I was like, I feel like it's going to rank pretty high for me. Obviously, when we eventually get to our Endgame episode, we'll see what the true case is there. But like, as you were mentioning, I think that this is kind of when Marvel settled in to like, okay, this is the standard to which we are going to hold our movies. And this is the level of hype we're going to try to accumulate around their release. And so I feel like now is the appropriate time for us to bring up like the current criticisms against Marvel. Which of course, you know, you can't mention without mentioning Martin Scorsese's scathing comment that Marvel movies are not cinema. And scathing. So, yeah, he don't come for my vocabulary right
no,
now.
No, I'm agreeing with your scathing yes. remark.
It's scathing. So I'm going to read a quote to you from the article that Martin Scorsese published in the New York Times, like clarifying his stance. And then I want us to like discuss these criticisms against Marvel. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Martin Scorsese said, quote, "Many of the elements that define cinema as I know it are there in Marvel Pictures. What's not there is revelation, mystery, or genuine emotional danger. Nothing is at risk. The pictures are made to satisfy a specific set of demands, and they are designed as variations on a finite number of themes," end quote. So do you think there's any merit to what Martin Scorsese is saying? Would you classify Marvel movies as cinema? And do you think that we should be like saying certain movies qualify and certain movies don't?
So first of all, I mean, to answer your last bit, I think like every movie is technically cinema, especially if it's making it to the box office. But like going into the actual details of what he's saying here, I think he has some validity in his remarks and complaints, but I think that goes to all movies, and I'm going to elaborate that on that in a second. But I think that they're actually not solidly founded when it comes to discussing the MCU. So basically, what I mean by that is, like, with all movies right now, like, it is hard to get, you know, super emotionally invested because, like, the mystery, the suspense, the stakes aren't always there when it's like, okay, this is the main character. It's only 20 minutes in. Of course they're not going to die, you know? Like, it's just, it's you know that it's not going to happen. And it's really easy to start predicting these plot lines, you know, especially with the amount of movies that come out every year. It's like, who's going to come up with something original, especially as a standalone? It's really difficult. But when it comes to Marvel, I think they actually do a really good job of raising the stakes throughout the saga. And the important way to look at it, in my opinion, is that this is not individual movies in the sense of a lot of other franchises or standalones. It is like these are chapters in a giant book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the stakes should not be very high until the end. Like this, like, sure, the climax of Avengers is not actually, like, this is the hard part of one chapter, but the climax is not actually there. It's much later on in the story, you know? And so because of that, like, I understand the individual complaints that you could have with a movie here or there, but there's just this giant, like, integrated story where, like, if I'm reading a book series, I do not expect the main character to be put in a ton of peril when they are, you know, only like 12 or 13, you know, like, for example, we were talking about Harry Potter earlier, like the Chamber of Secrets. I wasn't really worried that Harry was going to die because I knew it was only his second year at Hogwarts, you know, like you're not expecting it to be super high stakes, even though he's poisoned and is supposedly about to die until the Phoenix shows up. Right. Now the Deathly Hallows does a really good job with some high stakes situations. And that's kind of the point I want to make here is that, like, you know the Avengers are going to win. Of course you do. But, like, you also know that this isn't the end of their movies. Like, it's not Avengers, okay, no more Marvel movies. You know, there's stuff that's going to happen after it. And that's where the stakes are going to continue to rise. So you don't know what's coming. And they make sure of that with the end credit scene alone.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right in bringing up that, like, each film is not made to exist as, like, its own individual piece of cinema, but it's, like, one comprehensive narrative, one comprehensive entry into cinema, and that I don't think Martin Scorsese is looking at it in that way. And I also think that his complaints that there's no mystery, there's no revelation, there's no, like, emotional stakes, are, like, symptomatic of larger issues and an overall, like, lack of creativity in media right now. Because, like, it's not, like, just Marvel movies. Now, are Marvel movies emblematic of the problem? Yes, but they're not the root of the problem. You know what I mean? Like, our obsession with, like, reboots and, like, nostalgia media right now reveals that, like, clearly we are not, as audiences, like, seeking true revelation or true, like, unique stories and individual narratives. Like, we just want to be comforted a lot of the time by media, I think. And, like, whether or not that's the purpose of media, you know, I think Martin Scorsese clearly would say it's not, and I would probably tend to agree with him. But, like, audiences are clearly seeking out these types of stories. And so I don't think we should fault, we shouldn't fault studios for creating them, whether or not we should fault production companies and studios for diverting funding away from, like, other truly unique, truly original projects and, like, only funding these. Like, yeah, that could be an issue. But you raised a very interesting point about, like, how we should look at Marvel as not just, like, each movie is not its own thing, but it's, like, a chapter in a larger story. And there's a very interesting piece in The New Yorker called The Narrative Experiment That Is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I'll try to link it in the show notes. But it basically states that Marvel is, like, pushing back on our idea of, like, what a narrative plot should be, by, like, making it extend beyond our normal preconceived boundaries for, like, okay, like, the plot should come to, like, it should have a beginning, middle, and end just within its standalone movie. But Marvel doesn't always do that. Like, Marvel allows the, even though most movies do have their own beginning, middle, and end, like, the true end of the story doesn't happen in these, like, standalone movies, you know? Right. And that article closes with a very interesting quote that I really enjoy. And it says, one imagines that with time, the intricate web linking the movies will get more frayed and insubstantial, and the new movies will seem increasingly inessential. And yet, after a certain point, following a story for a long time becomes a story in itself. After watching nearly 30 hours of Marvel Adventures, Alex McLevy, the AV Club writer, concluded that the experience overtakes the nature of the content. This is true of the MCU more generally. When watching any individual movie, a kind of pattern recognition, an intellectual interest in how each new story evokes or departs from the others, replaces narrative pleasure. The narrative worth caring about becomes the story of one's own interaction with the MCU. Just as people ask about historical events, where were you when it happened, so fans ask where they were when Iron Man came out, when the Avengers first assembled, when heroes and villains battled in Wakanda. This is the story that's truly limitless. Ooh. And I really like that take from The New Yorker, as pretentious and, like, staunchly New Yorker as it is. The idea that, like, the true story is your relationship to the narrative and not the narrative itself at all, I think is very interesting, because I do think that Marvel is somewhat of an experiment, and it is so sprawling and it is so epic in its scope that, like, people's emotional connection to it stems more from the connection than from the emotional stakes within the films, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting that, like, the story and the importance of the narrative becomes more about your connection than the narrative itself. It's, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, that is a very New Yorker way to put things.
Yes, it is. But it's a lens through which I think, like, we should look at it going forward in our discussions too, because I do think it's interesting. And I'm going to be honest with you, like, sitting there during Endgame, absolutely, I was just, like, fully transported back to being a 10-year-old watching Iron Man with my dad for the first time in my hometown theater. Like, it does that. The movies effectively do that. They force you to, like, go back and think about how many times you've encountered these characters and, like, over the course of, because, like, for viewers like us, it's been, like, over half our lives now. Like, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So I feel like our attachment to the Marvel Cinematic Universe is very different than someone for whom, like, these are just, like, later additions to their film viewing habits, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know. I think it's an interesting discussion point. Like, is what's more important, like the narrative or your connection to the narrative?
Huh.
So we can, I feel like when we get to Infinity War and Endgame, that'll be a big point.
Yeah,
discussion.
Yeah. This is a good time to bring it up though.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should check in on it with like each, I don't know, important cornerstone of the like Marvel cinematic universe as you get to it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a good like lens through which to be looking at it. So now I want to ask you, Hagen, how is the experience of rewatching this movie in 2020 different than watching it in, say, 2012 or any of your previous watches?
I think it held up a lot better than I thought. You know, once I started watching it, I really didn't, you know, put it down. And it was nice because, like, it played into this nostalgia bit. But since I haven't seen it in several years at this point, there was also enough little things that I was able to catch that were fun, you know. And so I think it really holds up. The special effects are, like, you know, they're solid, especially for it being 2012. And the acting is good. The writing is good. Knowing what it turns into, I think there's just, like you said, there's so much personal connection to the narrative that, like, I just enjoy it. There's no, like, bittersweetness that comes with it. Like, it's just, it was a good time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It was an even better time than I was expecting, I think. Not that I wasn't expecting to have a great time, but like I said, I was just pleasantly surprised by how well it held up.
Right. I feel like, you know, there's always the chance that, like, when you're like, oh, I have to rewatch this movie, sometimes it can feel like it's a chore, but it definitely was not.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was just a fun ride.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, is this a film worth rewatching, Hagen? And how would you convince someone of that fact?
Yes. I think if someone hasn't seen any Marvel films, I think this is actually the best one to just watch. Because it's so early, you don't really miss anything. I mean, anything huge, if it's the first one, you know, and you want to introduce someone to it, and you would have a blast watching it yourself again. Because, like, it touches on all the intros. It's the best way to bring people in, and it's early enough where you're not missing too much. But then if you're just a hardcore Marvel fan, it's also like, I mean, if you've seen it like a few months ago, then I don't necessarily highly recommend it. But, like, you know, if it's been a few years and you're looking for like another movie to watch during quarantine, and you haven't rewatched The Avengers yet, it is an excellent place to start within the Marvel universe.
I think you're right. I think that it's a great, like, introduction for someone who hasn't seen Marvel. And, like, absolutely, if you become a fan, you should go back and watch Iron Man and Thor and Captain America the First Avenger. I mean, I'm not going to force you to watch The Incredible Hulk, but that one's there. But I do think that, and Iron Man 2, you know, take it or leave it. I would take it because Black Widow's introduction. But I think that you can absolutely start here and get a sense of who these people are. Their introductions are handled effectively enough in this movie that, like, you can just start from here. And then, like I said, if you become a fan, go back and pick up those others. But no, this is so well executed that I think it's a good starting place for anyone.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we didn't cover in our conversation, Hagen, that you think's bears mentioning?
I mean, I think we were pretty thorough.
I do too. We've talked.
We almost got to the runtime. Well, not quite, but, you know, we got close.
We did get close. We can gab pretty good, Hagen. I always.
Yeah. What else is new?
On our episodes, I'm always like, oh, is it going to be long enough? Because I don't write as many notes for your episodes as I do for some people's. And
wait,
then
really?
We get to talking and I'm like, oh, shoot, it's going to be plenty long.
I feel like if the Percy Jackson episode, was that your longest?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And, like, we almost hit 2 hours here. I think we almost hit 2 hours on Thor. It's just have a lot. Yeah. Because you can introduce one topic and we'll stay on it for, like, until we start talking about a new one.
We truly could do this all day. Really can.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so I'm gonna close this out.
Go for it.
This has been Play It Again, Kyla. As always, if you have suggestions of films you would like to hear discussed, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find the podcast with the handle Play It Again, Kyla on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can find me personally at @Kyla_Z_Percival on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd. Once again, this has been Play It Again, Kyla. I am your host, Kyla Percival, signing off and saying, I voted for Andy Kaufman.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.